Welcome back to the Power the Future Energy Hour. Here's Rick Whitbeck.
As we come back to the Energy Hour here, the rest of the show is going to be about one of my favorite subjects in all of Alaska. It's the Pebble Mine. Anybody that has listened to the show, watched me on Twitter, watched me in op-eds, knows that I am an unabashed supporter of the Pebble Project and everything that it could do for the state of Alaska. We've had a number of people associated with Pebble on the show over the years, Mike Heatwall, Mark Hamilton, and others. But today I am thrilled for the first time to be able to welcome to the Energy Hour the president and CEO of Northern Dynasty Minerals, which is the parent company, the company that actually owns the Pebble project, Ron Thiessen. Ron, I know you're coming, you're up here in Alaska right now. We're taping this on Monday afternoon because you're actually going to be out on site when the show airs tomorrow. Welcome to the Energy Hour.
Pleasure to be here, Rick. Coming to you from, I want to say sunny, but not quite so sunny, Anchorage, Alaska.
You know, it's great to have you in state. It's great to have you here and going out to Iliamna tomorrow, from what I understand. This is, for Alaska, an amazing opportunity. For those listeners who may not be completely familiar with the project, why don't we start out with just kind of an overview from your standpoint of what the opportunity is for Alaska, for your company, and for the world with Pebble.
So let me start with, you know, the end. That is, this is one of the greatest deposits in the world.
Yes.
It's one of the most important deposits, I think, in the world, and it's located in Alaska. And it's located in an area that's lightly populated, Western Alaska, 40,000-50,000 square miles, about 7,500 people live there, but nobody really in the immediate vicinity of the deposit itself. It's gentle terrain. It's not your classic Alaskan mountains, glaciers, and running rivers. The valley that Pebble sits in, actually the only time it's got running water in it is freshet, when the snow melts and runs out of the valley and then it dries out.
Right.
And I think it's the kind of asset that certainly the state of Alaska has got to be proud of. I mean, there are some fantastic mines in the world, but, you know, Pebble today stands head and shoulders above them all, and it has everything that, you know, a mining operation is looking for. It's not going to interfere with a lot of other people. It's simple, easy mining. It's got excellent metallurgical attributes. You know, what we've designed will produce about 350,000 ounces of gold a year and 320 million pounds of copper, you know, plus molybdenum, silver, rhenium, and palladium. And it's exactly what the world's, it's exactly what the U.S. needs in this time of, you know, constrained critical metals availability. And the U.S. can become, this could be a significant contributor to self-sustainability. The U.S. has a shortage of metal smelting capacity, and this is the kind of deposit that could drive not a smelter, but a new world hydrometallurgical refinery for the state of Alaska. You know, it's a technology that's been around for a while, but it's only been employed once elsewhere in the world. That's on the Voisey's Bay deposit, too. And it produces metal from this hydrometallurgical process, which is a contained system. There's no smokestacks. There's no emissions. And any unwanted elements come out inert. And it recovers metals at about 96-98%.
Wow.
And Pebble can drive that for the state. I remember when Murkowski was the governor and talking to him, and he said, you know, Ron, unless you're going to build a smelter in Alaska, we're not going to give you a permit to build. And I said, Governor Murkowski, if you can get a permit to build a smelter in Alaska, we'll build it. But
sure,
I don't think that's going to happen. You know, the last smelter that was permitted in the United States was 1971, and that smelter was not built.
Huh, so that's incredible.
The United States needs not only mines and the Pebble Mine, but it needs that downstream production facility to produce the metal that's needed to produce electricity, transport electricity, manage electricity, and use electricity. It's the most critical element in the electricity train, because you can't, you don't find electricity in the natural world. You have to make it. And you make electricity by, spinning an armature, which is spun with miles of copper on in a magnetic field and disrupt electrons. You organize the electrons then with copper wires and get them going down the copper wire. That's a DC current. You mm-hmm. manage it at a step-down transformer to alternating current, and then you distribute it to its end users, where you reverse that initial step of spinning a copper armature in an electronic or a magnetic field, and you create kinetic energy again. So, if you want electric cars, you absolutely need copper, as I'm going to believe the most critical element, and it's been the key element to the production and use of electricity since Thomas Edison started electricity.
So, Ron, let's talk about this, right? Because certainly I've seen it that we need a 10 to 20 fold increase in copper if we're going to meet the Paris Climate Accords goals, which, I think are hokey to begin with. But let's run with that, right? There's you would need 17 pebbles, effectively, from what I've seen by 2050. And yet you guys have been in a 17 year fight to try to get this mine opened.
Well, we started, the mine was discovered in 1986, 87 by Cominco. We acquired it in 2002, and we've been working on it since then. We brought Rio in 2006, Anglo 2007, First Quantum in 2013. We've spent about $1 billion on the project.
Right.
Between 2011 and 2014, we were harassed a lot by the EPA and the Bristol Bay Watershed assessment process, which was, a completely managed, unscientific, unfactual, attack on Pebble. But then in 2014, they actually launched a proposed determination to veto us before we'd even, gone into permitting.
Right.
And they wanted to prevent us from going into permitting, because they know that we can safeguard every issue and we can meet every environmental standard that is required to have Pebble go into production. They just don't want to allow us into permitting. I mean, we did overcome that with a pretty hefty legal process. And, in 2020, we got 80% of the way to the goal line. So I don't consider what happened a failure. We got what's called an FEIS, a final environmental impact study done. And it's one of the most positive FESs that I've ever seen. I mean, on all the key issues, that FEIS was unequivocal. People talk about tailings failures. And I'm not supposed to use the word catastrophic tailing failures, but they happen, and they almost always happen because of mismanagement of water.
Sure.
But we specially designed our tailing storage facilities in a manner that we would not store excess water in that facility. We stored PAG rock, potentially acid generating rock, in a completely separate facility, so that we wouldn't have to have water sitting in a tailing storage facility in perpetuity. And then we designed two water treatment plants so that water would be treated to the standards that the state of Alaska requires and be discharged constantly. And at the end of the mine life, that PEG rock would be returned to the bottom of the pit, and the actual tailing storage facility would be completely dried out, effectively dry stack tailings, and then we would vegetate the top of that, and it would just become a landform. And the Army Corps of Engineers and AECOM, their independent consultants, concluded that they could not envision an event, a series of events, including human error, that could lead to a catastrophic cannon failure. That was just so black and white.
Let's do this, Ron. We need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about then the politics of what happened next and where you go from here. So we're going to do that with Ron Thiessen. He's the president and CEO of Northern Dynasty Minerals, the Pebble owners, and we will continue that conversation with him in just a few minutes here on the Energy Hour.
Welcome back to the Power of the Future Energy Hour. Here's Rick Whitbeck.
Absolutely awesome to have Ron Thiessen. He's the president and CEO of Northern Dynasty Minerals, the owners of the Pebble Project and Pebble Prospect, on the Energy Hour with me tonight. Ron, again, appreciate your time. Know you're up here in the beautiful state, and giving me time is a blessing. So thank you again.
You're welcome.
So we ended last segment with a clean FEIS, a clean Army Corps of Engineers report. The science was clear. Pebble has no factual basis for ever having a permit done anything other than approved. And yet here we sit today with an EPA vetoing of the project, an Army Corps decision that has been sent back for reconsideration that basically said, even though the science is good, we're going to deny the permit based on adverse interest. Fill us in on how that garbage happened, please.
Well, Rick, I mean, these things happen, and you can either wallow in your grief, or you can assess and move forward. And fundamentally, you never really want to be in a political maelstrom like a presidential election, because there's so many variables going on.
Sure.
You know, the odd time you're the odd man out, and we were the odd man out, and the decision went against us for political reasons. That said, because of that FEIS, and because of the work we'd done, we said, you know, we can reverse this, because in the great old United States, litigation ultimately can overcome political decisions. So we appealed the ROD denial and the CMP denial, which is the Comprehensive Mitigation Plan, and the PIR. And we won that case. I say we won it because the Army Corps of Engineers review officer and that appeal process came out and remanded the negative decision back to the Corps in Alaska for reconsideration, and with directions to that Corps to tell them that if you've got any statements that you've made, like there will be catastrophic tailings failure, and you don't have a substantial engineering, scientific, truthful document to back that up, you can't say that, because the record, the FEIS, says the opposite.
Right.
So the reasons they gave for denial, they've been instructed to lose those reasons. And you lose the catastrophic tailings failure statement, and water quality issue goes away, because the FEIS says we won't impact negatively water quality. The subsistence fishing and hunting problem that the denial said goes away, because the FEIS says we won't have any negative impact on that. The commercial fishery impacts goes away with the negative statement, because they've been directed that, and the FEIS says we won't have any negative impact on the commercial fishery. So I think the biggest elements of this remand order are much in our favor. Same with the comprehensive mitigation plan. The review officer was pretty critical on how they'd gone about doing that, and pointed out several, you know, serious errors, and said, you need to redo it, and you need to rectify the mistakes. So, you know, sometime here in the near future, we're going to get a redo on that ultimate decision, and we'll be outside of the political maelstrom of a presidential election.
Well, and the
we are waiting.
Sorry, go ahead, Ron.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say. Yep, go ahead.
I was just going to say that they've given them 45 days to tell them how they're going to do this, in the face of the EPA having launched a preemptive veto through a final determination.
What else has to, you know, keep you guys at least smiling somewhat in this process is also the Sackett versus EPA Supreme Court decision, where they start talking about watersheds and WOTUS, and, you know,
absolutely,
that was absolutely an overreach on when I read the Corps' FEIS and then I read the final determination, it was like, well, you have to have mitigation in this watershed. It doesn't, you know, we're going to extend what watershed means. We're going to extend what you can or cannot call existing waters. I think Sackett pretty much put that to shreds.
It really has. I mean, there was a bunch of things that were done during the permitting process, but really right at the end. In fact, after the FEIS, they changed the categorization
right
of what the watersheds were from Huck 10 to Huck 12, just so that they could make it virtually impossible for us to meet the mitigation requirements. And we still think, we believe that we met those requirements. And when I read the review officer's remand notes, I mean, if they do what they're instructed to do, I think that CMP still works. You know, even though she said, you know, without a substantive documentation of why you went from Huck 10 to Huck 11, the proponent probably has the right to question that and go back to a Huck 10. But that is what it is. Our next order of business is to address the EPA. And Sackett's really does drill home the fact that the EPA is guilty of tremendous overreach.
I sure.
mean, for the EPA to try and preemptively veto 309 square miles is nothing short of obscene. Their veto right applies to a project that is about to receive a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers. Our project that we put in for permitting is not 309 square miles. It's 6 square miles. It's completely different than the
right.
309 square miles. They're trying to sterilize the state's asset of 309 square miles, and under Sackett, that 309 square miles isn't wetlands. I mean, maybe a portion is, but I doubt that 50% is. So the EPA is, it's overreach, it's ultra-vires, it's just not right in any sense of the word right or wrong, or the words right or wrong. And so we feel pretty comfortable that the same thing is going to happen on their final determination on the preemptive veto has happened in the Sackett's case. You know, this is excessive. It's overreach. It's not in the legislation that Congress passed. So do that. And then we'll get to the Army Corps of Engineers. We'll do the remand, review, redo, and we'll see where we are. I mean, I feel very good that we can come out of this with a permit, but you know, we got more things to do, and I can just assure your readers we're going to do it.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, this is $1 trillion on state of Alaska land. It's a project that needs to happen if we're going to go and quote unquote go green. We can debate going right. green all day long, right? But if the world yep. wants to go green, it needs Pebble. Again, it's on state land. The state has a right and a mandate from the federal government to pursue opportunities to self-sustain itself. You guys would allow that to happen.
The state entered into a land exchange agreement to facilitate the feds creating Lake Clark National Park. And what the state took back was this area that's become Pebble. And based on its geological prospectivity, which I'll say that the feds induced the state into,
right.
and the state was supposed to be able to develop this geological prospectivity without reservation. Well, here's the EPA. What do you think a preemptive veto is? It's a massive piece of reservation, you know? So, I mean, I think there's breach of contract, there's constitutional issues, there's all kinds of things that the state has. We don't necessarily have those. We have our own rights. And so between the state and ourselves, I think we will overcome this final determination in the days ahead, and then we will get this remand, redo, done.
Ron Thiessen, that is like some of the best news I've heard from a guest in a year, 2 years. Like, I mean, your enthusiasm and your positivity about this project and this opportunity is so refreshing, because, you know, all we hear from the mainstream media, all we hear from, say, Bristol Bay and all those well-funded anti-Alaskan entities is, oh, this is dead forever. BS. Pebble's alive and well, right? I mean, that's the takeaway with a minute to go.
And I'm telling you that all Alaskans are going to share in it, and Western Alaskans are going to share in it a little bit more.
It's how many jobs? How many jobs it's how many jobs in the state of Alaska?
There'll probably be 3,000 construction jobs and 1,200 operating jobs. And then for every direct job, there's at least one, if not two, indirect jobs. And these are all high-paying jobs, you know, $100,000+ a year.
Generationally changing. I can't
Let
wait to see it happen.
Thing,
sure.
One caveat. This is a multi-generational mine, but it will require re-permitting as the project develops through the years. I mean, everybody knows the duration potential. Understand that every one of those changes needs permitting, and the state of Alaska should be the preeminent party doing that.
I agree. Ron Thiessen, thank you for your time. President and CEO of Northern Dynasty Minerals, our guest, Mike Schauer, before that. Guys, have an energy-filled week, everyone. Thanks again for tuning into the Energy Hour. For Ron, Mike, and me, have a great, great week.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks to all your listeners.
Absolutely.